and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Dan Kurtzky.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 612.
Don't you mean episode 4?
If it was episode 4, I wouldn't feel like chained to this microphone for like the past almost 10 years. Actually, more than 10 years now. That's the sad part. I say 10 years like it's a long period of time. It's been friggin' 12 almost. Oh, God.
No. I don't know why I still have a hard time grasping the fact that we've done this longer than Dan and Jim did.
It's easier for me just because the first episode we did was once together was 170. So the fact
when we think of episode numbers, yeah, but just when I try.
You're right. I agree with it. It's always there in my mind and probably your mind. So it is hard to imagine. But yeah, no, it's not episode 4. But we are talking about the Fantastic Four, otherwise known as we're dancing on the grave of the Marvel Empire even more, not based on quality of the movie, but based on everything else. Oh, God.
So, we should probably start with the quality of the movie, though.
Oh, we're going to definitely start with the quality of the movie before we delve into the really fun stuff. No, I'm kidding. The equally fun stuff, but I just hope I can remember the movie. I was saying that to Jim the other night. It's like, man, I don't know if that speaks more volumes about me or the movie. It's the fact it's only been almost 2 weeks since I've seen it. And it's like, man, I hope I'm still fresh enough on a lot of the small details in this movie.
Well, you notoriously fall asleep during every movie you ever watch. Happy for what we can get from you.
It's not every movie. Actually, I don't fall asleep I don't fall asleep that often in the theater, unless I really don't give a crap unless I'm seeing something to see it, but I don't care. So Fantastic Four would not be a movie I would be falling asleep in, though, and nor did I.
I saw it opening weekend. Oh my God, shocking. The third movie I've seen in a month in the theaters.
That uses up your quota for the next year and a half.
Well, I actually plan on going to see Superman again. Actually, I just really liked it that much. But anyways, I saw it in the IMAX screen at my local theater. I say IMAX is a misnomer, I guess. I don't know. To me, IMAX is like at what's it, for those of you who know, at the Bob Bullock Museum in downtown Austin, where it's like a several stories tall screen, the way IMAX was intended to be, as opposed to just a very larger than normal screen in a regular theater room that just happens to stretch from ceiling to floor, as opposed to whatever the normal screen is. But I saw it in IMAX regardless, whatever you want to call it, which was a great choice because of how the movie looked visually with Galactus and the space stuff especially. I thought it was pretty great. I don't think this story was particularly uber original or not predictable in some ways. It's a very simple story. There's not a lot of shock and awe here in terms of twists and turns you never saw coming, which we'll get to it later on. But some of the marketing just spoiled the crap out of some of this stuff for me anyways. But I love, especially after seeing Superman, oddly enough, I know that Marvel has done this, but I really noticed it again, especially in relation to Superman,
the fact that we're kind of embracing the weird again, like kind of how I talked with the Superman movie, the way they just let Metamorpho's powers be what they were, and it looked ridiculous at times, but it's supposed to, because we don't need to ground it in reality. That's the way it's supposed to look. It would look stupid in some way, shape, or form. I like the idea that they were just going forward with, yeah, magic baby. And yeah, really tall armored dude that makes really no sense at all. You know, stuff like that. So like, I instead of like, we're going to hide him behind the clouds in a shadow, in a flash of light, you know, that kind of stuff. We're just leaning into the weird. And the homage that we got in the beginning in that sequence about the history of the FF, the homage to their first issue with, I forget the name of the creature, but the creature that comes up out of the ground and they're fighting around him or whatever, in the street. We straight up got an adaptation for a few seconds, but got an adaptation of that. And I like that Johnny wasn't the airheaded, idiot, annoying ass brother this time around. He still had sort of the Johnny charm while also being a contributing member, a pivotal member of the family. Every role in terms of, obviously it was more centered on Sue, probably, I would say, for the most part, obviously. But I like that there was time focused on each of the members as opposed to any sort of imbalance. And I think despite it being predictable, I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't come out of the theater going, man, you know, the MCU is back, in terms of quality, not necessarily critical response or box office or whatever, which we'll get to later. But I did go, I like that one. I would like to see it again. And I looked forward to owning it on Blu-ray or something, you know. I know that's maybe a low bar these days, but I did like it.
Dan?
No, I'm the same. I mean, look, with media being more disposable than ever, it feels like, the fact that you and I both look forward to owning a hard copy of this that we can revisit whenever we want is, I think, a good sign. Because, like, let me tell you, there have been plenty of MCU movies over the last few years that I absolutely do not want to do that with. And, like, between this and Thunderbolts, you know, the whole, oh, the MCU's back meme, whatever, I'm glad that they're just starting to make good quality, fun movies again. Whether they light the whole world on fire or they make all the money that you could ever imagine, like, I don't care. As long as they're successful enough and an enjoyable experience. And this was an enjoyable experience for me. I just told somebody earlier, they finally made a good Fantastic Four movie that wasn't called The Incredibles. It took them so long to get here, but they got here. And is it perfect? No. Like, it was probably like a little overstuffed with plot, and it was kind of missing the slice of life downtime aspect of just like, hey, these are real people that living in the city under unique circumstances, and what are their lives like? You know, they gesture at that a lot. And they try to, especially through Ben and his interactions out on, like, the street with, like, random people and everything. But, like, going to what you were talking about, Chad, like, they did a good job of presenting, like, a good variety of what makes the Fantastic Four a fun and compelling concept to follow. Every other Fantastic Four movie, except for maybe the Roger Corman one, I don't know, but they, it's always been made by people who are almost ashamed of the concept. And they're like, okay, well, how do we dial this back? How do we make this more realistic? And this one just says, no, fuck it. This is silly. And we're going to revel in it. We are giving you the giant dude who's coming to eat the world if you don't hand him a baby. Because why wouldn't we? It's fun. Go with it. And yeah, I'm just happy that we got so much of just like the nature of this property represented well. I never expected they were going to go to space in this movie. Like, I knew there wasn't going to be the origin scene, and I knew Galactus was going to come to Earth. So I thought, like, oh, we're going to be on Earth for the whole thing. So when I got to see the Fantastic Four get into a rocket and go explore the unknown depths of space. Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. Give me a negative zone portal while we're at it. Because, like, the explorer aspect of these characters is so important. And we got at least a taste of it in this. And Galactus was cool. Galactus was great. Herbie was perfect. I don't know. I like this movie. What do you think, Mark?
No, I liked it. I might be in the minority here, but I liked it more than Superman. But yeah, it's not perfect, and there are times when it kind of see. I partially agree with you about the family stuff, but there's also parts of this movie where it does kind of. I'm not going to say I was bored, but there's a lot of conversation in this movie. There's a lot of scenes of characters just talking in this movie, which again, I think it kind of works, but it's a big chunk at a time, so I think it does for some people it might slow the movie down. Galactus was good. Of course, we didn't get enough of him, probably because they didn't want to spend the money on him. I wish he had wanted Franklin more to recreate his universe and to basically, as I kind of joked around, that to be the next incarnation of, well, Thanos having a retirement plan. Well, obviously, Galactus had a retirement plan, too. It just happened to be Franklin. I thought it was interesting that, and again, we don't know how much of this changed during the reshoot, so that's why. It's kind of hard to say that, oh, some of the things you heard about the movie were inaccurate because some of these things may have changed. But, I mean, clearly Sue was up front. They may have toned down how much of the main character she was when they reconfigured the movie. But you could see where the idea came from that Sue, the reports that Sue was the main character. You can see enough of that in here. The idea that she was pivotal in beating Galactus. She and the Silver Surfer were pivotal. That rumor survived. It may have been more so. We can talk about, at some point, we'll talk about what the rumored original ending of the movie was, which is why they had to fix it, since it wasn't working for anybody. But the stuff that could, you know, Quinn talking about Johnny not using the term toxic masculinity, but essentially describing it. Again, do we get, this movie does not, you know, this movie shows you enough of who Johnny is. So that never became an issue, just like the gender politics thing that Vanessa Kirby brought up. You could see that because she's the face, basically, of the Fantastic Four and the Future Foundation / United Nations interactions. But that wasn't really a major issue in the movie either, the way it was put together. So I did find it interesting that a lot of the things that we heard about the movie, even if whether they were toned down or not, really were not it didn't really take away from the fact that the story works. Pedro Pascal is fine. Is he really Reed? No, but he plays the part well enough where it's not really a distraction. So was his master plan all that great? I mean, was that should that have been the first thing you thought of? Let's teleport the planet instead of teleporting Galactus? Probably not. It's like, it would have been a lot easier all along to try to figure out a way how to teleport Galactus. But yeah, Galactus was realized really well. And I think that made it cool. That made it, and I did like the fact that they did, the world they established clearly were the Fantastic Four were the only heroes in this world, but they did a good job of throwing in pretty much almost every Fantastic Four villain that you know, not all of them, of course, there was no like Bombard, the Living Bomb Burst or whatever, but, or Annihilus or things like that, but many of the Fantastic Four villains that you know about, they were name dropped or you get to see little scenes of them. Or too bad Malkovich got cut as the Red Ghost. That probably would have been worth keeping. But I did like the world that they built. Yeah. And then the idea of setting it on a different Earth where we didn't have to worry about all the baggage of the MCU. I think generally speaking, that was a plus.
Yeah. Speaking of the villains, going with what Dan was saying too earlier, this is also a world where obviously we're going to see this FF in our future films in the MCU based on current plans. So how many times we're going to see this universe again, I don't know. But if we got another movie in this universe, I could easily see, yeah, let's go for Fin Fang Foom. And let's make him walk straight off the comic page as is. We don't need to do any updating. I'm down.
Isn't it great how we got two big comic movies this summer and both of them establish that, you know, this is a world where a giant freaking monster can just be there and you don't have to explain why or where it came from. It's just a world where that happens sometimes. Just go with it.
Yeah.
And black holes. Gotta worry about those black holes.
we always How is it possible that both of these movies involve the heroes saving a baby from a black hole?
So, I mean, Pacific Rim did a good job of that too, right? The whole Jaeger versus Kaiju, they come from this thing, then it's just been a fight and world established, here we go.
Yep.
You know, it's a weird parallel to make, I guess, but I do, there's some merit in just being like, fuck it, here's the world, let's go.
Yeah, but I'm thinking in terms of like, you know, if this was a movie made any earlier than it was made, they would have a whole scene explaining like, okay, well, that giant green monster from the montage came from this science experiment that the government was researching this, and that got DNA from that, and then, but no, they're like, no, giant monster showed up, doesn't matter, just run with it and go.
Oh yeah, and an entire part of the populace lives in a subterranean world, and that's just a part of the way the world works.
Yeah. You know, if I had to level like one nitpicky thing at this movie, I wish the mole man looked like the gnarlier.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to put him in a comic accurate suit, he should look like he smells terrible.
I was gonna say something, but I'll let it go. No, I think if they set this, it's interesting because I do think very much like the joke in Deadpool and Wolverine about it, you're kind of joining at a low point. That in a way, it's true that because of when they released this movie and when it came out and its purpose now, it was free to kind of be its own thing, though I do think it probably would have done better and been more appreciated if they hadn't kicked this can so ridiculously down the road into this far into phase six.
Yeah. Dan, you said your one critique. My one critique, I would say, my primary one there, I might have more if I think on it a little more. But in terms of stuff I didn't like as I was watching their movie and clocked it, I know it sounds crazy, but how stretchy Reed was or wasn't. The fact that Galactus was able to pinch and stretch him and it got only as far as it did and it immediately started hurting for Reed was a little strange for me. Like, because, I mean, he's Mr. Fantastic. He's kind of like Elongated Man and Plastic Man. He should be able to stretch a whole lot further than that, but that a minor quibble. But I did go like, really, when I saw him in pain when Galactus was just sort of pinching him barely.
Yeah,
but it's Galactus.
Yeah, but he was barely spread across Galactus's chest, like the width of Galactus's. He barely stretched him.
You don't know how wide Galactus's chest is.
We have the city around him for scale.
We know Galactus can change size anyway, but it's also possible maybe some of the pain aspect had to do with, maybe it was tied to these suits, the unstable molecule thing, because his suit was ripping apart toward the end when he was really in pain, as he was being really stretched to the limit, his suit was ripping too. So, yeah. Which I guess could just show how powerful Galactus is, but.
Can we talk about how awesome Herbie is?
Yeah, I liked Herbie. I'm glad Herbie got his due, because I remember I didn't love when they brought Herbie into the animated show because they couldn't use Johnny at the time. But I do have the first issues of Fantastic Four when they introduced Herbie into the actual comic book. So I did kind of always have a soft spot for Herbie, and I'm glad they made him inherently likable in this. And. And it was funny when he was baby proofing the Baxter Building, and everybody kept falling, especially Johnny and Ben. They kept tripping over and banging into everything that he was, like the sprinklers and all this stuff. And Ben was tripping over everything and all that. That humor was funny. Just like Sue was less than thrilled when Reed pawned off on building the crib like under Herbie too.
Well, I like when Herbie unplugged everything to put in like the little safety things in the outlets, but he put them in all of the outlets and didn't plug anything back in. So it's just pitch black now.
I like how his different modes are triggered by a little literal cassette change in his face.
Yeah, I do like that. That was a nice touch. I mean, who knows? It could technically be digital. It could be digital tape.
That's true.
But the point is, yes, and that's one thing I would say. Well, another thing that they did right, is like the nice combining the fact that we know it's a futuristic version of the 60s. So it looks very much like the 60s, but obviously the technology is way more advanced. But they're still using some things that we would know today, you know, kind of more like smartwatches and things like that. But yet, yes, something as simple as that, they're not putting in a disc, they're not putting in a flash drive, they're putting in it's some form of tape on reels that they're plugging in. So I did think that was a nice touch, but. Because they did that when they were about to go into space, right?
Yeah.
That's like the first time they did it when he was put him in space mode.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Just the fact they brought him with them to space. Like, I was so pleasantly surprised with how much Herbie was in this movie.
Yeah. And involved in the final plot, too. They trusted him to watch after the baby.
The final standoff of this movie was Herbie v. Galactus.
I also liked a lot of the cameos, a lot of them, especially at the beginning, the nods. The one I specifically pointed out to Mark that I definitely wanted to talk about on this episode is the brief moment we get flashing inside of the Timely office.
Yes.
Where we actually see Jack Kirby and Stan Lee standing at the window as Silver Surfer goes into, the equivalent, I guess, of Times Square or whatever. It's just a moment, but that's supposed to be the OG Timely office, folks, a.k.a. what Marvel was before it became Marvel. It used to be Timely Comics. But you can see some Timely stuff and some panels and stuff posted up on the wall. You can see Jack Kirby's drawing table or something, but they're just standing. You don't see their faces, obviously, but it's obviously an homage to Stan and Jack.
I forgot, I didn't remember to look it up again, but apparently the artwork hanging up in that office is referential to the specific comics they were making at the time.
Yeah. Now that was cool to see. Obviously the homage to the first appearance of the FF and things like that. So that was really cool and good to see. I got to say, Johnny not being an idiot this time, actually having some agency. I wouldn't say that the brotherly aspect in terms of the brotherly instinct or whatever wasn't in the other films, because it was, but definitely felt a more familial connection there between them. The fact that he, was figuring stuff out for himself. I was a little irritated. Obviously, let Johnny do his thing and figure out his own thing. That's totally fine. The fact that he didn't tell Reed what he was doing at all. But I get that Reed had a lot on his mind, and maybe Johnny was just like, no, he needs absolutely all of his brain power focused on this one thing. I can't even distract him for a moment, because isn't it even a thing in the comics that if, Reed can't really be distracted because he obsesses over things. So I guess that's not a big nitpick, I suppose. But you can't just tell Reed what you're doing. Just give him a hint. Hey, I have an idea here. Just FYI, I'll be working on this.
Something I wish I did do a little bit differently is the fun little moment of Sue opening the door to find that Herbie is assembling the crib. Make that Johnny and Ben trying to assemble the crib together, and it's a catastrophe. You can lean into the Johnny-Ben dynamic a little more while also giving Ben a little more to do in the story. And it would still let you arrive at the Reed Sue conversation you wanted to head to afterwards. I really it didn't bother me at the time, but the more I think back on the movie, I wish Ben had some more focus, or he had a more fleshed out storyline for himself.
Of all of them, he is definitely the one I think that has the least amount of story or storyline. You might suspect that was some of the stuff that was at some point in the movie, whether it was whether it was changed because of they had to alter the ending, or just they didn't have enough time when they had to add some extra stuff in, and then they had to make some of the other stuff work with the new ending. Maybe some of the stuff with him and Yancey Street and in the synagogue and things like that, and that probably got cut short. I would suspect at some point in the draft anyway, if not actually filmed, that he had more to do there. But even so, that would have given him more personal stuff. But yeah, as a member of the, I think that's probably why they focus so much on him flying and driving everything, just because otherwise, yeah, he didn't really have that much to do.
You mentioned the synagogue. I do want to say not that I am of Jewish descent, but as the guy who loves Ragman and all that he stands for, I do know how limited the pool is of Jewish characters and representation in comics. So I do like that obviously they didn't focus on it super deeply, but I like that they even kept that aspect of Ben's character in the film.
I was going to ask, were you taking it as like, oh, they are acknowledging him as a Jewish character, or was he just going there to visit that lady because he was there?
Both, probably.
Yeah, both probably. Just because he said he grew up just on the corner. I assume he went to that same school and things like that. So obviously, I'm assuming a lot there, but I think that was what they were trying to imply.
Okay. I mean, I like that reading better, because I thought like, oh man, they couldn't have like said something about it, or like it almost looked like her being there was an excuse for him to go there without acknowledging it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Also, Ben with a beard, I like it. I didn't think I would. And the fact that he actively shaves is such a strange concept, but it works. It looks good.
Yeah, there was I'd seen somebody reference this before. It's happened in comics before. I think there was a story where Reed and them just travel into the future to see how long Ben lives.
Oh my God, that sounds like a terrible idea.
I could have the context wrong, but they do just kind of like go to the future and keep going further just to see how long, you know, Ben will live or whatever. Because I guess his biology has changed to where he will be a much longer lived individual. And in that story, you can see Ben with a beard. So
is it also made of rocks?
Yes.
Thank God.
What else would it be made of, Dan?
I don't know. Honestly, if it's an old enough comic, I could see some lunatic just giving him like a hairy Father Time beard and just calling it a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess somebody would do that. Jeffrey Thorne. Are you kidding?
Love Silver Surfer, this movie. This is just a question, because I'm not as much of a Marvel guy as I am a DC guy. Have we ever had a Silver Surfer character, or somebody in the role of Silver Surfer, who actually just does what Galactus wants at all times?
I think Nova, not like Helmet Nova, but like Fire Lady Nova.
Oh yeah, Fire Lady Nova.
Frankie Ray. That was a good story arc. I have those issues when they actually beat the shit out of Galactus because he's almost which is one of those weird things. It's like he has no energy, but somehow making a herald somehow makes him happy, so he can get more energy. It's like, but you don't have any energy now. I'm running on empty. So how do you have enough to make a new herald?
Yeah, the power cosmic is like, it's never gonna make sense. It's like it's unlimited power, but you gave a piece of it to your herald, which should mean that the Silver Surfer is as powerful as Galactus and also all the other heralds. It doesn't make sense.
Not to take us on a tangent, but I actually have thought before if it would be an interesting story if they somehow, and maybe they've done this and I just, you know, missed the issue or something. Have they ever tied in the power cosmic to the Captain Universe powers, the Uni power?
I don't think so. Or made any sort of ties
between them? I think that would be a natural story to tell.
Yeah. Could be wrong. Why not?
Yeah.
You know what I didn't learn until, like, today?
Hmm.
Because obviously, like, when this got announced, it's like, oh, Silver Surfer is a lady now. Doesn't that ruin your life? I'm oh boy. And then I find out, just through happenstance, that the whole Shalabal as the Silver Surfer and the whole Franklin becoming the new Galactus thing, it's pulled straight out of the Earth-X comics. They changed some stuff, but the movie is more comic accurate than I gave it credit for going in.
The way they work the end, I mean, see, in a way, because I'm pretty sure the Silver Surfer was supposed to die in the original ending of this movie, which would have made more sense for them to go do it to swap then, because then you perfectly set the stage for the Norrin Rad version at some point showing up in the main MCU. But now that they ended the movie the way they did, where in theory she should still be alive, wherever they teleported Galactus to is where she is. Now, yes, you would think he would strip her of the power, and that would solve that problem. But that was one of those interesting things about how the movie and how the ending kind of changed, that I think it works better for in the actual movie, but because, you know, at some point you assume that they're going to do the actual real Silver Surfer, they're going to do the Norrin Rad version. But again, by the time we get done with Secret Wars, none of it might matter, because there may not be a multiverse left anyway. It may just be one timeline, and then everything's merged together, and then she just doesn't exist anymore. Not as a Herald of Galactus.
Well, also, I mean, they have the easy out of this is its own universe. This movie does not take place in the main MCU.
Right, but that's assuming that every universe has a Galactus, which I guess they could, but we don't. But things like, yeah, things are a little dicey because we've never, let's be honest, doing the multiverse in any kind of coherent way has not exactly been one of Marvel's strengths in phases 4 through 6.
Don't worry, I'm sure Kang will fix it.
It'll be fine.
I think we could very easily just get the Norrin Rad Silver Surfer in the main MCU anytime they wanted to do it. And the fact that, as long as they, let's be real, they're going to hammer home the fact that the Fantastic Four come from a different universe. So it's just like, okay, so this is the Surfer from over there, and this is the Surfer from over here.
Hmm. Can we talk a little bit about what the ending was supposed to be? Rumor has it.
Sure.
And again, some of this, I think, well, obviously some of it was true, because they wouldn't have been doing reshoots for the last couple of months, and all accounts said they're reworking like the final 20 minutes of the movie. So some of the stuff that came out had to be true, because again, it was the internal screenings, it was the Marvel screenings that made them decide to do this. So it wasn't the public screenings that they had. The only real thing from the public screenings of relevance was the whole Doctor Doom, pseudo Doctor Doom, since it's not like you really see him, but you know it's him. The mid credit scene was reported when they did the actual public screenings, and people said, "Oh, that can't be true, because they never include post credit scenes when they do the screenings." But again, almost all the screenings they ever do are internal screenings. But that's where the ending must have bombed so badly, even amongst fellow Disney employees and family members. It's like they realized, okay, we have to fix this. But it was something along the lines, and this is where this aspect of it could be open to interpretation, that originally, supposedly, that Sue was the one who really made the Silver Surfer change her mind, whether it was woman to woman, mother to mother, that was implied that Sue was the one. But that could have been misinterpreted, just because Sue and the Silver Surfer do end up being the ones to beat Galactus, so that might have been a misinterpretation. But the reason why it probably isn't entirely is because the way they defeated Galactus was that the Silver Surfer supposedly literally pulled something out of her you-know-what, and her you-know-what, this case being her surfboard, which I'm assuming would have been our version, their version, of the Ultimate Nullifier. So they used it to destroy Galactus, but the catch was, yeah, it'll destroy Galactus, but it's going to take like half the universe with it. And I think that's what they ended up doing. I don't think they destroyed the Earth in the process, because that would have defeated the whole purpose of using it. Why would you bother doing that then? You would be causing more harm than good. Plus, I think they had moved away from the ending of, oh yeah, Galactus destroys their Earth, and that's how they end up why they would be in that ship if it's really them flying at the end of Thunderbolts. But I think they ended up doing that, using the Ultimate Nullifier, killing Galactus, but wiping out a significant portion of the universe. And that was what the rumored first ending was, which is why everybody hated it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great. It significantly diminishes anything Johnny has to do. And also it's
the needs of the few versus the needs of the many again.
Well, I mean, my thing is, like, one of the things I really like about this movie is how it can be taken as a totally standalone movie without, like, even with the Doom thing at the end kind of teasing like a future movie, whether that means a sequel or Avengers Doomsday or whatever. I mean, I know it means Doomsday, but there's, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I had the thought too of like, oh, what if Galactus eats their Earth so they come to the MCU Earth? But like, that would feel terrible, and it would make the entire... A Fantastic Four movie should not be about the futility of life, you know? Right. A Fantastic Four movie should be an uplifting, exploratory family drama that also has punching bad guys in their alien space faces. So like, there was no way they could have just pulled that kind of ending out their ass and it would have worked.
Yeah, no matter whether there's a little bit of truth in both parts, whichever ending it was, whether the Earth got destroyed in the process, whether the Earth survived, but hey, we took them out, but we wiped out half. Either way, that doesn't seem very uplifting, nor does it seem very... You're already putting the planet at risk for your kid. Now you're putting the entire universe at risk for your planet. It's like, well... But so I do think the reworked ending works better, because you kick the can down the road. And let's be honest, Galactus is not a villain. Galactus is definitely not a villain that you should be able to kill off easily, nor should you. There are some... They've had enough problems in the MCU's history of killing off villains needlessly, and Galactus is one. I know it's another universe, and they can bring him back very easily, for especially depending on how they rework things in the reset after Secret Wars. But the reality is, I think they made the right call. So they got they stopped Galactus temporarily, but it wasn't something that. It wasn't a final defeat, or they didn't figure out a way to lay the smackdown on Galactus when logically they shouldn't really be able to do that. So it's like, okay, we had enough of a plan and technology, and with the Silver Surfer's help, because without that, it still would have failed, because he was clawing his way out of the black hole.
Yeah, the multiverse can be a really fun tool when applied properly, but it can also cheapen things in a bunch of ways if it's done wrong. Something that we've talked about before is how, like, you know, we're used to DC and Marvel saying, like, you know, Earth 2 or Earth S or Earth X or whatever. And typically when we talk about those Earths, we're really just sort of talking about whatever super team comes from those Earths. And it just sort of glosses over the fact that, oh no, those are full, densely populated planets in fully populated, like, universes, and we're talking about, an event happens that obliterates how much of it. It's very tempting to use the alternate universe concept as a way of having consequence-free events happen, because there can always be another version of a character, or a version of a character that you like can come over here now, and don't worry about all their baggage because their universe got erased or something. But you have to be very careful about how much tragedy you're willing to staple on to which characters, because some of them can carry it well, while others, it would be so diametrically opposed to what they are and what they're supposed to stand for, that it could just be like a lead chain around their neck. You don't do that with the Fantastic Four, especially after spending so much of the movie building up this incredible world that they live in, that I hope to God they get to continue living in after all this Avengers nonsense that we're going to get pretty soon.
Yeah, that is the danger of the multiverse. It's like it makes so much stuff, it's inconsequential after a while.
Yeah.
When is Doomsday coming out?
Next December.
next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh man, I hope that's good. Ever since they revealed the Robert Downey Jr. thing, I've just been so disinterested.
Well, that's the best thing they have working in its favor too, because there's not a whole lot. I mean, the going to the well one more time with the original X-Men is going to be, that's going to be a draw, which, you know, they're desperate to have draws, so I get it. But as far as building any kind of grand interest for that project, there are opportunities who have done that have pretty much dwindled, with the exception of Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is probably going to have absolutely nothing to do with, other than whatever post-credit scene I'm sure the Russos are going to film for that movie too, which at least I can hope to God we actually get to see Doctor Doom at the end of that movie and the post-credit scene. At least show us the goddamn armor and him in the armor, because it is kind of a ridiculous concept that we're going to be sitting here. I mean, we probably at that point will have seen a teaser trailer and maybe it'll show him in the teaser trailer. But the idea that we have this big bad villain for the entire sloppy phases 4 through 6, and we have literally not even seen this guy once, other than pseudo seeing him when he's talking to Franklin. It's kind of a crazy setup. That's a lot of heavy lifting to do when you're introducing him in the same movie that he's supposed to be, that we're supposed to care about him in. So that's they can do it, but
like I'm hoping that they're holding stuff back that is going to be a nice surprise, because like I so badly want there to finally be a good live action version of Doom. And and the fact that it's coming in the form of a desperate Robert Downey Jr. stunt casting gives me like rock bottom levels of hope for it. But maybe I'll be surprised, you know?
Yeah. Give us a Doom who's a genius and a sorcerer and a sovereign of his own nation. Not just genius.
Yeah, we did get the little nod of the Latveria seat at the UN being empty. That was neat. But yeah, I don't know. I'm more interested in Secret War than I am in Doomsday, if that makes any sense. But like,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just terrified that these next two Avengers movies are going to be Deadpool and Wolverine, but bigger. Yeah. And I want something better than that.
let's pivot into that thing, because I think we're kind of, it always seems to happen when we're talking about something really good or that we particularly enjoy, don't have a whole lot of qualms about. We have less to say than if we hated it.
Yeah.
But I will say, to use it maybe as a little pivot, because I did say I wanted to circle back to this at some point. I don't think it was necessary that Marvel kind of spilled the beans on the whole Franklin thing before the movie came out, as that being a plot, because I saw it in some of the trailers and or TV spots that ended up on social media. The fact that Galactus wanted the child, I feel like they sort of visioned that, and that wasn't necessary. I don't think that added anything to the audience this movie was going to otherwise get. In addition to that, this is something I didn't consider but saw somebody else, and I forget, otherwise I'd credit them. I forget which content creator said this. They were actually they were a little upset because when Sue died, they went, oh no, she's going to be fine because we saw her name on the back of the chair.
Huh.
Like they were irritated that, like, you know, that potential of Sue dying was sort of wasted because we already knew that Sue was going to be a part of future movies. I cannot see that.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't want to dismiss that point, but for me personally, I thought spoiling the whole Franklin thing was unnecessary.
The biggest problem with it is that they were going out of their way to essentially not, in some scenes anyway, obviously the way they edited them in the trailers, they were going out of their way not to show that she was pregnant and to change things so she didn't look pregnant. And during the initial trailers, just to have the big reveal, and acknowledge that. I mean, the toys are the biggest culprit in a lot of these things. It becomes blatantly obvious because of the toy leaks and things that, oh, certain things are going to happen in a movie or certain characters are going to be in a movie that they haven't officially announced yet. I mean, I get it. I mean, like you and I talked about the rumors of Galactus wanting Franklin had been in, out there for like months, even though it was more along the lines that he wanted Franklin to recreate his universe, what he lost, as opposed to the retirement plan. It's like, yeah, I've done this enough and I'm getting sick and tired of never being full. So you get to be hungry for a while and I'm just going to go kick my feet up and relax. And so, yeah, I do get it. This is the catch 22 that they're in, and they've kind of been in this way. They've really been in this for a while now. They've always had problems like this, but now they're desperate because of the fact that, yeah, it's how much do you show, because you want to build up as much interest as possible versus revealing the entire movie or most of the movie. And it's at a time when the MCU is hemorrhaging all over the place, and it's debatable whether it even has many blockbusters left in it. Other than the ones that are almost impossible to fail, that they were so desperate to get this movie to kick it into another level that I can understand. And their marketing campaign with the TV spots and things like that, they showed a lot, but I think in a way, like, they pretty much showed us all of Galactus. We didn't realize it at the time, but between the trailers and the TV spots and things like that, they showed us almost every single scene, if not every single moment of Galactus. We had seen every scene certainly he was in. But I understand partially why they do it, but yeah, it's frustrating. Like you've talked about, it's like they went the entire Age of Ultron marketing campaign not showing us Vision. Just to show us what Vision looked like 2 weeks before the movie came out. It's like, what's the point? Why do you keep him hidden this long if you can't keep him hidden or you're going out of your way not to keep him hidden? You try to keep him hidden, and then you're just kind of like, oh, here he is. It's like, what's the point then?
Didn't they do the same thing? And this is obviously less of a big deal, but didn't they do the same thing for Ant-Man turning giant in Civil War?
I think that was based on a toy.
The Lego set.
I think it was Lego, but at least I don't think they were showing that stuff footage wise before the movie came out. I don't think, but I could be wrong. It's been a long time since I remember seeing it. Because the biggest thing in all those trailers were when they first saw Spider-Man, obviously. Yeah. That was our first appearance of Spider-Man in the MCU.
God, did I ever tell you? I don't even remember if I did. So I had not been, like, back when Civil War was still coming, I had not been paying attention to trailers or merchandise or anything. Like, I knew Spider-Man was going to show up because
that one was hard to avoid. Yeah.
But something that I did not know was coming was the Giant Man reveal. And until I came on this show and talked about it with you guys and Jim, and one of you clowns was like, and as we all know, based on the toys, Giant Man's going to be in this movie. And I'm sitting there like, oh, okay, I guess Giant Man's in the movie. And then when the moment happened, I'm sitting there in the theater, I look to my left and I see the shock on my brother's face when he becomes Giant Man. And I'm like, that's the life I could have lived.
Damn you, Mark or Jim. I'm not going to blame myself. I don't think I did that. Because it's either Jim or Mark.
It wasn't me about the toy. I probably knew about it.
Yeah, well, but because Mark's into spoilers and learning everything he can about the movie before the movie, and both of Jim and Mark are into the toy stuff, so like it had to have been one of them.
No, I just secretly Chad.
Somebody's gonna go find the timestamp and be like, "Listen, asshole, it was you."
God, maybe on your 85th re-listen to the entire catalog.
I actually started listening to episode zero today.
Oh Jesus Christ, Chad, why?
Well, because I was listening to the most recent episode and Spotify was like, okay, you're caught up. So I guess it kicked it back around. I don't know why. Anyways, to get into the MCU stuff, because it's time. I think it's telling that despite the enjoyment we have and maybe even other people have had, because it seems like fan-wise, a lot of people seem to enjoy this movie. Obviously, in terms of box office and word of mouth, is it performing or is it sending people to the theater? Is it selling? That's a different conversation, I think. I think in terms of those who did see it seem to, for the most part, enjoy it. It's telling that despite being a more enjoyable movie than most of their recent entries, it's still failing because of the other decisions they have made and didn't course correct in time. Because a good movie is not enough to fix the damage they did.
And that's a good point, because, and that is a good segue, because arguably, with having Thunderbolts come out and now Fantastic Four, now, the statement I'm about to make is the asterisk could be if, for those who really think Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness was good, and or it was good on the level that No Way Home was good. But if you don't think that, like I don't think Multiverse of Madness was more of a was okay. It was a disappointment. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be or what I wanted it to be. But I would say, for me, this is the first time in phases 4 through 6 that they've ever had two movies that are good, really good, back to back from a quality perspective. They've had Thunderbolts and they had Fantastic Four, with both critic scores really high and both audience scores really high, but yet people aren't going to see the movies. And I mean, more people went to go see Fantastic Four, which was predictable. I mean, no one would have ever predicted that Fantastic Four would have a weaker opening than the Thunderbolts, because for multiple reasons. But the opening Fantastic Four had wasn't anything to write home about. It's kind of like right in the middle of the MCU overall when you look at it. And remember, you have to factor in there were a bunch of movies in there that, like Black Widow and Shang-Chi and The Eternals, a lot of those things. They were also saddled because of the early COVID recovery phase. And some of the other movies they're competing with on the list are movies that came out in 2011. So you're talking about 14 years ago. If you adjust for inflation, Fantastic Four would be way behind those movies. But USA Today had a really interesting article that I read over the weekend, which, as we're recording this, was the second weekend. The weekend of the huge 67.1% drop in box office for Fantastic Four.
67. I thought somebody was reporting 80.
No, you know why? That annoys me too. So let me delve into that for a second ahead. Because of the fact that it annoyed the hell out of me. Then we'll come back to it annoyed the hell out of me because what they were saying was not inaccurate, but they weren't putting it in context. The 80% drop was from opening Friday to second Friday, which is not, number one, it's not the worst drop of all, anywhere near the worst drop of, I mean, it's in the upper echelon of drops. But it's not the worst drop of all time. BVS, I think, at 81%. One of the Deathly Hallow parts had 84%, which makes perfect sense when you think about it, because Friday numbers are padded with Thursday previews. Now, Fridays are padded with ridiculous things. They're all-day movies on Thursday, previews on Tuesday. But even back in the day, all the midnight showings were padding it. Technically, they did occur on that day, but there's an extra influx of revenue that would never happen on the second Friday. So they were zeroing in on the 80% Friday to Friday drop, but they weren't giving proper context to it, which annoyed me. Because, and then look at some of the articles after, you know, once the whole weekend came out, most of those had it in the headlines, like Friday to Friday drop. But in the beginning, they didn't. So that was the 80% drop. But yes, without the context, it gave people the impression, oh my God, Fantastic Four is going to drop 80% for the entire weekend compared to last weekend. No, it was Friday to Friday. It dropped 67.1% for the entire weekend, which still sucks. There's no doubt about that. But USA Today had an interesting article, and this was less about how we got here, but just zeroing in that where we are. That their point or their thesis, and I agree with it, is that the reason why the MCU is in the where they are now, when it comes to not being able to really open anything big without something being a ridiculous event movie like Deadpool and Wolverine, is because what they have hemorrhaged horribly in phases 4 through 6 is they have lost pretty much everybody but the core comic book movie or comic book reading audience like us. People who are prone to go see these movies no matter what. People who, yeah, we know the MCU is nothing compared to what it was, but there's still enough of an interest to keep up with it. To watch most of the stuff, if not everything, when we can, But the average moviegoer who was not a comic book fan, wasn't even a big comic book movie fan, but got pulled into the MCU as they got bigger and bigger, and as they were world building, these are the people that they've been losing and losing along the way. And now we've gotten to the end of phase five into phase six. They have lost so many of these people that even when you have a movie that's good and people are saying, hey, this is good. No, this isn't like Brave New World. This isn't the Eternals. This isn't the Marvels, Quantumania. This is actually good. Maybe not upper echelon Marvel in context, but it's still good. That it's not enough to draw people in more than maybe a single viewing at best. And let's be honest, Disney Plus, I think, is doing them no favors when it comes to that either. Where's our incentive to go see movies in the theater more than once when we know in 4 months we can watch it on Disney Plus as many times as we want? So I think that's a negative. I think that hurts it too. But I do think that assessment is correct. I think they've hemorrhaged so much of their non-core audience that's why that empire, as far as I'm concerned, their empire is fallen. And I don't think it's getting up. It's fallen and they can't get up. I think it's going to continue on. It's like the British Empire. You know, the sun never sets on the British Empire, or it never did, and now they are a complete shell. They're still a power. They still have a lot of respect in the world, but they're nowhere near as powerful or as influential as they were when that statement was true, when they had colonies all over the world. The MCU is like that too. Are they going to have some big movies still? Yes. Is it ever? And you and I talked about this 6 years ago. We never thought it would possibly, regardless of our takes on it, we never thought in a million years it was going to come to fruition so quick, no matter what. But the idea of, hey, could the MCU ever be as big as it was after we hit Endgame? Could it ever be this big again? It's pretty safe to say it's very unlikely it's ever going to come close to that again. Could it have one or two movies that are successful? Sure. Even when they do the reset, which you assume is going to be like a soft reboot, because you're not going to recast everybody. It would be kind of stupid to recast Kamala or Kate Bishop or somebody, or arguably maybe even Yelena, some people who are young enough and people like the way they are doing these characters. But even when they do the reset, how much is that going to work? We may have a new Tony and a new Steve, but now you have to compete with, you have to cast the right person. People have to think they're right in the role, and now they're competing with the legends of Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. too. So I don't know, but I think there's a lot of problems here, and I think that box office wise, even Spider-Man, when you think about Spider-Man, Spider-Man's a surefire hit, but there's no reason to think it's going to do anywhere near No Way Home money, because doesn't look like it's going to be an event movie like No Way Home. That movie was built entirely on the backs of the old Spider-Verses and the villains and the belief that Tobey and Andrew were going to be in the movie even without marketing it that way, which Sony was smart. They knew that they were correct about that. We don't need to put that in there. That'd be a quote-unquote surprise for people. Plus, they probably already expect they're in the movie anyway. But that movie's going to do well. But if it's really more of a grounded story with either no ties to the multiverse or very, very small tangential ties, is it likely to do, you know, like $1.5 billion or something? I doubt it. So, I don't know. Supposedly the Marvel is realizing this, and they're kind of like, they're readjusting their expectations for what the MCU is at this point. Whether it's true or not, but those are the rumors that it's like we can't. $1 billion is not really realistic for the majority of our projects anymore. So they're going to adjust accordingly, which also will probably mean lower budgets too.
Well, that everything you just said in that last sentence, I think, is a good thing that they arrived at through not good means. Like, yeah, they a lot of stuff is going on here. Like, they gave audiences a very good jumping off point with Endgame. They burned a lot of goodwill with those who stayed by making a lot of mediocre to bad movies after Endgame, and they continue to spend way too much money to make these movies, which means that they have to make $1 billion or they're failures, and they're not going to make $1 billion if you dump them onto streaming right away. So it's like, Yeah, they need to approach how they make these movies differently front to back. They should be working with smaller budgets. They should be waiting longer to release these things on streaming. Give people an actual incentive to go to the theater if you're going to prioritize the box office, which, you know, unless I miss something, streaming services and their numbers are still a fucking black box. So who the hell knows how successful any of that stuff even is. So, like, I don't know. Is the box office even the biggest metric, the biggest, most accurate metric anymore like it used to be? But either way, like, nothing would make me happier than to see Marvel make movies that cost half as much to make, because suddenly they could make things like the Fantastic Four or Thunderbolts or something that would not be seen as financial failures. Because of course they're going to be, if you're going to spend the reserves of a small country just to get Galactus on screen.
And even with what they've, I mean, it's not, I mean, and you're right, everything you said is correct. And the Fantastic, it's not like the Fantastic Four budget is, you know, it's crazy, but it's the fact that with this movie, and Chad and I talked about this briefly, it's like, you know, the winner of the 3 July movie blockbuster battle, the worldwide winner is clearly going to be Jurassic World. That's locked in. Superman is going to be the domestic winner because it's only like about, as we speak, it might not even be behind Jurassic World anymore. It's going to pass Jurassic World. So basically, both those two movies will have something it can claim. One can say they're going to be the domestic champion of the three. One's going to say, okay, we won worldwide. And then there's Fantastic Four, who is bringing up the rear. And even this weekend coming, it's supposed to do like something like about 18.5, and now be nowhere near number one anymore. But that's assuming it's going to only drop 53%. Because some of the other movies have dropped 53% in that, but it might drop more, and it's going to be losing some of its premium screen, so it's possible that movie could drop even more. I mean, Superman only dropped 53% in its second week. Jurassic, which is interesting, Jurassic, even facing Superman in its second weekend, only dropped 56%. Actually, one of the bigger stories is how well Jurassic has held, considering A, it's not a great movie, and B, you would think that's a franchise that was weakening too, but obviously it's got more legs than the MCU does, and arguably even more than in comic book movies as a whole, because the genre probably is weakening on its own now to a point where we almost have to acknowledge that there is some level of superhero fatigue. Finally, that might be real because the cumulative effect is now taking hold.
To build a little bit off of Dan's point about Endgame being something that Marvel gave the audience as an out, an exit off ramp to the MCU. I think that idea, combined with what you said, Mark, about what USA, it was USA Today?
Yeah.
What they were saying and the conclusions they reached. I think the downfall of Marvel somewhat facetiously, I guess, I don't know, just in terms of I think there's still merit to the franchise and stuff regardless, but so downfall might be a bit much on the nose, but I think for me that sort of solidifies the idea that I've had, and I know this is not a unique viewpoint, that the Disney Plus stuff was a mistake. And I don't mean setting things up for streaming within 4 months or whatever. I just mean the series, the expansion of the universe, because not only does Endgame give people an out in terms of, you know, the end of the story that you've been building, you're now also simultaneously introducing to people the idea that they no longer have to watch everything. Like, whether or not it was actually true prior to Endgame that you had to watch everything to understand what was happening, that's neither here nor there. It was sort of an unspoken rule that, you know, you would enjoy it more if you had seen everything. But it feels like post Endgame, it became much more acceptable to just be like, oh yeah, I can miss that. Oh yeah, I can miss that. So because that idea got put in people's heads with relation to the MCU projects, they started seeing the films in a similar light. Because if it's okay that they miss
6 to 8 episodes at an hour and a half, an episode each, surely it's okay if I just miss this 1 2-hour movie. I just think, look, in terms of quote unquote the downfall of Marvel, it'll be definitely something, a cautionary tale or something that people maybe look up in some sort of, I don't know, film theory class or whatever about trying to execute a successful franchise in the modern era or whatever, you know, college course comes out of this or whatever. But I just think, I think like everything that's complex, it's a multifaceted cause. I don't think just one thing caused the downfall of Marvel or the downfall of the MCU. But I do think the decision to just bombast everybody with content and content that they could now miss without missing anything was maybe a mistake.
I mean, they got overconfident.
Yes. Go ahead.
You probably remember this better than I do, Mark. Like right before Thunderbolts came out, the head of Disney or something said, like, made some kind of statement to the effect of, like, you know, we just got so used to being on top of the world and hitting home runs every time. We just figured that it would always happen forever. So we just prioritized quantity over quality and paid the price for it.
The pride goeth before the fall thing. But you are correct. I mean, you're talking about, there is a War and Peace-sized book that can be made, I'm sure, about the fall of the Marvel Empire, because it's been so precipitous and it's been pretty absolute. I mean, it's not, I mean, they have all the capital that they had and the goodwill they had, and arguably even a huge percentage of the pop cultural impact that they had has all went just in the course of 5 years, which is just imagine how fast it would have been accomplished if Kathleen Kennedy was running Marvel. But all kidding aside, you're right. It's multi-layered, but Disney Plus is a big factor, and it on multiple levels. But the content is being forced to do the content. Yes. But again, like you mentioned, it's quantity over quality. Feige has a huge responsibility because he okayed a lot of crap that never should have been okayed. Nobody was asking for an Echo show. Nobody was asking for an Ironheart show. We literally had not even seen the character on film yet, and that show was greenlit. And you're basing it on a character nobody cares about from the comic books. So what made you think people were going to love her in Wakanda Forever enough to greenlight a show about her as opposed to so many other characters in the MCU that either we haven't explored or just haven't gotten pushed to the side in phases 4 through 6? And then you look at them, and exactly what you said about consequential. Well, that's what has hurt the Disney shows. In the beginning, we had been conditioned to think that something important was going to happen, not just in the show as a whole, but at the end of every episode or at the end of some episodes, or there's going to be a post-credit scene that's going to be important, because that's what the MCU had been. And once it became clear, as these shows rolled out, that there was very, very little of relevance, arguably, in the show a little bit, but the post-credit scenes, most other than maybe the last episode of the series, were not important, along with the movies we were seeing, in which they seemed inconsequential, very low connective tissue. Probably at least half the movies, if not more, of the movies in the multiverse saga had nothing on the surface to do with the multiverse. Either for the entire movie or for 90% of the plot, then you'll throw in something at the end that kind of ties it in a little bit. But even then, so many projects that were greenlit in phase 4 and 5 have nothing to do with the multiverse. Let's be honest. Even Fantastic Four to the very end. I mean, yeah, Reed's got his multiversal bridge thing on his chalkboard, but the movie isn't about multiverse hopping. It's just about jumping from points and it's teleporting in your own universe. Obviously, Breed's going to use that, or Dr. Doom is going to use that, or he's just going to use Franklin in the ship. If he and Franklin are in the ship, depending on who's... But either way, the point is they're going to use that technology to multiverse hop, but most of these projects, they've made it... Their universe building, which was so strong and built on characterization and interpersonal relationships in phases 1 through 3, has been pretty much absent in phases 4 through 6. And I think that these are all things we will talk about when phase 6 ends and we put the postmortem on this. But it definitely is, you kind of reap what you sow. And now they're at the point where, yeah, when I said the Fantastic Four came out earlier, probably would have been better from the perspective that if you put out something good, it doesn't have to be great. But if you put out something good when the MCU was still relatively popular, this movie would have resonated more. People would have seen it more. It would have more impact. Now we're at the point where literally they're putting out two good movies. That's why Thunderbolts really shook them, which is why supposedly they were spending so much money trying to fix Fantastic Four, the ending, because they really thought Thunderbolts was going to be a home run for them because they really thought it was fantastic, no pun intended, and it was pretty good. But they were shocked that movie cratered the way it did and didn't make as much money. Now, mind you, it held in week two better than Fantastic Four, which is the reason why Fantastic Four is, it's not unique in Marvel for dropping, but it's a movie that seemingly should have been the one to help put Marvel back on track, and yet it still can't hold. So it's, there's so many things here, and it's really interesting to watch. Like right now, I don't know if I would even bet. If you asked us like a couple of years ago for an Avengers movie with Dr. Doom being the bad guy in it, even without the Robert Downey Jr. thing, let's say we didn't even know who was playing Dr. Doom yet, but it was going to be the setup for Secret Wars, and it was going to be Dr. Doom in all of his glory, a $200 million plus opening would be, oh yeah, that's a slam dunk. A slam dunk. Right now, I don't know if I think it's a slam dunk that movie's going to open up over $200 million. It should, but I don't know if it will right now. I mean, maybe we'll have a better feel. Maybe I'll change my mind after Spider-Man comes out. If Spider-Man does well over $1 billion, even with it being more of a, in theory, a grounded story, then maybe I think that there's enough goodwill from Spider-Man and the interest in all these characters coming together, the Avengers fighting the old X-Men and all this stuff and all the, maybe there'll be enough as a gimmick, if nothing else, to draw people in on opening weekend. But what if people see that movie and they hate it?
How much isn't the Spider-Man? Isn't the Spider-Man draw pulling in the Netflix stuff?
Oh,
like with Punisher and everything.
Well, that's, well, technically, but even though that's now more Disney Plus, because Bernthal right. is a Punisher, well, and
yeah, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah, yeah, that's the other thing too. But the TV shows have not shown to be any kind of draw for the movies yet. Yeah. So that's why, you know, when they confirmed Ruffalo was going to be in Spider-Man, which, of course, for the last 3 months, if you'd been reading any, watching stuff online or reading a lot of the stuff in the trades, the rumors about Ruffalo being in the movie had been out there for a long time, because it makes sense, because that's what Sony has always gotten out of their deal with Marvel, is a major MCU character co-starring in a Spider-Man movie every single time. And the Punisher absolutely was not going to cut it. You can make a case Daredevil wouldn't have even cut it. That's not high level because it's, again, it's a TV character for the most part. So it's not a big enough draw. Spider-Man is its own thing. It's going to do well. It's going to give them the best kind of momentum, assuming people like it. That's the X factor. For God help them. If people don't actually like the Spider-Man movie, then it's absolutely done. I think they're barely on life support now. The empire has fallen, as far as I'm concerned. It's never going to be anywhere close to what it was before. It'll have an occasional moments of success. I think this is whatever, you know, the rise. We've seen the rise, and now we're seeing the fall. And where it settles into, how much of it's still going to be a factor, we'll have to see. But it's not going to be what it was. And I don't know. I don't think they can. It would take a long ass time for them to be able to build it back, if they could at all. It took them like 10 years to get the MCU as big as it was rolling into Endgame, where you could roll out Captain Marvel and make $150 million, where you can make the interest in Endgame, where a 3-hour movie, which automatically should limit the number of showings and limit your box office, makes $350 million opening weekend. That would take a whole lot of luck and a whole lot of heavy lifting. And like Dan said, it was arrogance. It's a belief that it's what they're learning the wrong lessons from doing Guardians. Oh, we can take any obscure character and throw it against the wall and make it work. No, you can't. Maybe James Gunn can do a lot with obscure characters, but just as a general rule, you pick obscure characters that nobody cares about and you don't write a good story and you don't make them interesting or give you consequences, no one's going to go see it.
Well, the good thing is that we've already seen them take some steps towards realigning their business model and their expectations. You know, I forget what the exact number is or anything, but I'm pretty sure the only MCU movies out this year total are Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four, and like the
Captain
they're all
going to
have like, oh yeah, oh that was this year, okay.
And it does seem like an eon ago though, doesn't it?
Well, I saw it on Blu-ray, so that throws my time sense off. God, that fucking Red Hulk on the book. I'm sorry, I have to tangent for a second. That movie treats the Red Hulk like this huge reveal. And the story does a good job of like building up to it, every second, every scrap of marketing material has the Red Hulk in it.
Just like Chad said, that goes to Chad's point about too much.
Again, I got this Blu-ray for my birthday and we watched it. The Red Hulk is on the front and back of the Blu-ray. You open up the Blu-ray, he's on the booklet, and he's the character printed on the disc. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck? But yeah, you know, other than that, they're heading in some right directions. I fully believe that whichever Avengers movie is overflowing with cameos and guest appearances, whether it's Doomsday or the other one, will do fine financially. Like, it will do the big numbers that they wish it would do, for the exact same reason that Deadpool and Wolverine did the big numbers that everybody wished it did, because they are going to load this up with every character from every superhero movie you have ever seen in your entire life who is still alive and willing to take a modest paycheck. Like, we are going to see Chris Evans' Captain America stand next to Chris Evans' Human Torch and look at each other and kind of nod and then go punch bad guys at the same time. And that will be a clippable social media post that goes around and gets viral. Like, that movie will make more money than God, and everybody will rejoice. And the biggest question is, are they going to learn the wrong lesson from that? Because I think it would be a much better in the long run if Marvel kept doing what they appear to be doing right now, which is make movies like Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four, only release like a couple of them a year, if that, and slowly realign things so that the money these movies make are more significant because you can adjust the factors around their creation.
I'm still not sold at that movie. Conceptually, you were correct that that's why it's hard to fathom entirely how Doomsday is going to go, because there's more people, like you mentioned, there are a lot of people that are against Robert Downey Jr. casting a Doctor Doom, when I think it's literally the only thing this movie has working in its favor is Doom and how Robert Downey Jr. portrays Doom. But I think the big problem they have is they may throw tons of characters against the wall, but how many characters do people really care about anymore? Let's leave the X-Men out. Let's leave the Fox characters out, which are a gimmick and people do care about them. How many people really care about Sam Wilson's Captain America? How many people really care about Captain Marvel? How many people really care about Shuri's Black Panther? They have a whole bunch of B-minus, C-plus tier characters in the MCU now. And I don't know. And they've done such a lousy job at establishing these characters, and certainly establishing any teamwork with these characters, that I think it's a gamble. And you're talking about a movie that is already rumored to have like a budget of like $400 to $450 million, and that's probably just going to go up the longer this with the movie being pushed back. And if you listen to Rebecca Romijn with a movie that still doesn't really have a final script yet, when they asked her, they literally asked her during an interview, it's like, hey, have you done all your filming for Avengers Doomsday? And she was honest and said, I honestly don't know because they're still working on the script. Which means they could call her in at any moment, I guess, when she's available to do reshoots if they keep reworking the script. So that's not and I know Feige will tell you this is kind of the model that they've always done, which has always sounded stupid, which is their model has always been, we want to start with a great script to go into production, and we can make it a good script, and we can make it a great script in production. Really shaky way of making movies. But again, like you said, the arrogance, it has worked before. So this is not a movie you can F around in, because if they screw up Doomsday, they might as well just stop. But I think that's a little, it's certainly going to make money. But again, if the budget ends up being like $500 million, where even making a billion just gets you across on the verge of being profitable or not losing. And that's where it comes down to. It could have a great opening weekend, but is it going to have any legs? Are people going to want to see it again? That's the thing. There's so many intangibles here. So I think, and I think Fantastic Four, unfortunately, because people were so giddy about Fantastic Four. When this movie opened up on that Thursday and a Friday, it's like, oh, it's going to do $125 million, or at least, you know, it might beat Superman. Then by the time you got to Saturday, they realized it was weakening. And it was like, okay, it's going to do like about 118. It did less than that. It did 117. And this goes back to something Chad and I talked about. And you mentioned the 80%. I just want to say this real quick, and this is pretty much the only thing I want. I don't want to monopolize this. But it's the same thing. We talked about it. It was the same website that's been doing this, and it's been annoying me. WD Pro was the one who made the big deal about talking about the Fantastic Four's first Monday was not only weaker than Superman's, which is true, but how it was weaker than Quantum, lower than Quantumania's in Brave New World, without putting it in the context of those were President Day Mondays. So, of course, those Mondays are going to do better than an average Monday during the summer. Those same sites were the ones doing that 80% stuff last week and putting it in context. And then I saw a video talking about the estimates. When the estimates for last weekend for Fantastic Four were on Saturday, they didn't adjust them down. We're down to 40 million because originally thought it was going to do like 45. And it said, okay, it's going to do 40. The same site was complaining because you look at the estimated box office for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they were all round numbers. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, are you that anti-Disney that you don't understand how estimates work? All the estimates they give you for the weekend for a movie are round numbers. They're not going to give you an estimate that's going to be 40,121,747. That's what friggin' actuals are for. They give you estimates. So if they think it's going to do somewhere between, you know, if it's going to do like somewhere in around 40 million and change, they'll take 40 million. But they were making it sound like there was this grand conspiracy theory. Oh, and yeah, it came in lower, which was a bad sign because movies don't usually come in like about $1.4 million, $1.5 million lower in estimates than the final actuals. Don't come in $1.5 million below the final estimates. That's bad. And that's been happening to Marvel a lot. It happened to Thunderbolts twice in their first two weekends that the estimates came in over $1 million. The actuals came in $1 million lower than the final estimates. Even when they adjusted the estimates down, it still came in. But I just hate it when people just take shit out of context. If they hate Disney, it's just, oh, they want it to fail so bad. It's like you can't even put the numbers in context. Trust me, if you waited long enough, like we're talking about, there's plenty of numbers that if you want to dance on their grave, there's numbers that let you do that legitimately. You don't need to play the game and cook the books.
I think I'd be more interested in the Doomsday and the Secret Wars if they told me the Defenders were going to be in it.
Oh, you mean the TV characters?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's not good. They definitely want to keep those separated now.
Would you settle for a scene of Charlie Cox Daredevil getting knocked down and somebody reaching out a hand to help him up, and it's Ben Affleck Daredevil?
That'd be cool. But, I mean, despite that last season, I really liked Luke Cage. Or despite that, how that last season ended, I really liked Luke Cage. I think Daredevil was really great, but Jessica Jones I liked more than a lot of other people did.
She's coming back. She's coming back, though.
Yeah. So I just have a lot of love for that. And yes, Iron Fist was executed poorly, but I still would like to see him on screen. And the way that series left off with the disappearance of what the hell is that city? Yeah, Kung Lao. They sort of left on that cliffhanger. Not that they would pick that particular thing, that thread up or whatever, but I just, anyways.
I want Colleen back. She deserves it.
I think Marvel. This might be controversial. I think right now, based on everything we've seen, and I'm obviously not a CEO or have anywhere near this level of experience to make this call, or even Mark's knowledge of the film industry. I think for me, it would make sense if Marvel announced tomorrow. Have they confirmed that they're doing the reboot post Doomsday?
Yeah, I think Feige has confirmed that they're doing.
They have.
They need to officially abandon those plans. They need to work on what they have right now, because I agree with Dan. I think Doomsday does numbers. Am I as confident it'll do numbers as I used to be in the MCU? No, not at all. But I think it will do numbers regardless. But it doing numbers is not your indicator to continue the universe, or that you have the gas to do so. Because you got to think about it, I think, financially, in terms of not only can you make these good, the next few movies great, it's also they're going to have to lock people down into contracts, which is also going to be expensive. And just because Doomsday makes money doesn't mean you're back enough to afford said contracts.
Well, the X-Men are going to be nobody, so that's not going to cost them a penny.
Thank God.
Right. I'm just saying.
I know,
I think they should abandon the idea that they're absolutely going to reboot and refocus on everything they have now.
But again, like we said, like we talked about, it's going to have to be a soft reboot or a reset, because they're not going to get rid of everybody. It would be dumb to get rid. I mean, why would you? Not that they're
but
doing much.
But you still lock people into contracts regardless.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, character wise, it would be dumb for them to get rid of. Why would you get rid of Kamala? Why would you get rid of America Chavez? Why would you get rid of all these characters and in this case these actresses, which are young enough to play them for a long time? Why would you why would you do that? How would that be enticing to people? Yeah, you can make a case, well, it's going to be an easy jumping on point, but you run the risk of hemorrhaging even the support that you have from the diehards if you wiped out every single character we've watched essentially since 2008. Now they're all the actors and all the characters who played them are all gone, and now we're starting from, it's like, I don't know.
It's the end game problem again.
Yeah,
them another good end point. Like,
see, originally I had heard, because they had copyrighted all these different trademarked all these different sagas, that originally I had heard that they were planning on doing this reset. And maybe this is where things have changed now too, because of the lack of success. But this was supposed to be way down the road they were going to do the reset. Like the next saga, and it still may very well be, but the next saga is going to be the Mutant Saga, and then there was another saga after that. So the reboot, from what I saw, something that said that this was going to come, this was like more like another two sagas down the road, but that may be adjusted because of how poorly they are, how poorly they've done, and they figure, well, this is might be a course correction method to open the door for, along with bringing in the X-Men, which almost guaranteed are going to be the focus of Phase 7 going forward.
I mean, the thing that gets me is that it feels like the only real benefit to rebooting the MCU is that suddenly any characters that have died or you would have to recast or whatever, you have a clean slate to just do them over again with different actors. But I don't know, like in my mind, you kind of, even if you'd never brought, not never, but like even if you committed to the pivot away from Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, like there's so many other characters played by so many other actors that you already have, that it's kind of enough of a reset already, you know? And like we're already like testing the waters. Like, you wondered, like, why are they bothering with this, with pushing Ironheart? Well, it's probably because they know they don't have Iron Man the same way they used to, and for some reason, instead of shifting Rhodey's position around, they decide, okay, well, can we bring, what's another genius inventor armor character that we can get in here? And I feel like it's an overestimation of the value of the character when they've spent so much time getting you invested in the actor playing the character. Because like, say what you will about their frankly, on again, off again commitment to recasting people, but so much of the MCU is about getting you invested in Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark. So if you reboot the MCU and we've got a whole new version of Tony Stark now played by a new actor, who's to say people are going to care? Because that's literally not the person that a decade of movies got them invested in. Like, yes, it's the same character technically. It's not going to be their Tony Stark. So what do you think you're actually gaining from rebooting, other than the fact that now we can have a character named Tony Stark wearing Iron Man armor, which won't even look like the Iron Man armor that they like anymore either, probably. It feels like a superficial change that they're not going to get as much out of as they want, when really they could just be investing in like, you know, you have so many characters that were introduced during the days of the Downey, the Robert Downey Jr. era, and characters that came in after it. Nurture that, grow that, build that into a list.
But I think they've been trying to do that in their own way. They may have, their approach may have been horrible, as far, or the results may have been. But I think ultimately, when we go back, and one of the major problems that has led to this is the fact that they overestimated what they had left to follow up on after what they lost. What the characters they had remaining and the characters they thought they were going to introduce that people were going to like. Remember, at one point they thought Captain Marvel was going to be one of the faces of the next phase of the MCU. We know how well that's turned out. That losing Tony, losing Steve, losing Natasha, they wiped out a lot of the heart and soul of what made the MCU the MCU, and they didn't really have, and they clearly did not have a good plan to replace them. But wiping out all, killing off in some way, shape, or form, we know technically he's alive, well, he could be alive, that getting rid of Tony and getting rid of Steve was a mistake. They should not have gotten rid of both. They could have probably survived getting rid of one. Getting rid of both was probably a really bad strategic move, especially because they had not established a worthy successors that people were really invested in, and that's... We can just imagine how long our phases 4 through 6 episode will be. I'll have to make a lot of notes for that. That'll be a big outline for that one.
Jeez.
You're invited, Dan.
Oh, thanks. God. If there's one big takeaway I have from this, is that I'm just surprised to learn Chad isn't a CEO. I mean, what are we even doing here?
That's right. I want my money back.
Well, thanks for joining us, Dan.
Oh, thanks. Nothing like a brisk conversation.
What do you got coming up on Mosaic?
By the time this comes out, I'm probably finally caught up on Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps. I'm putting together my review on the first issue of the Starbreaker Supremacy. And, you know, that sure is a crossover. Let's see what happens. So
it's barely that.
And
well, to be fair, we've already seen the first part, right? So it really isn't a crossover yet.
Yes, but if you would like to hear about comics that are, you know, some might say better, that are also about Green Lantern, you can go on over to Mosaic Comics on YouTube, watch the extensive backlog of me never stopping talking about the Green Lantern comics and stories and characters that I love from the last several decades. Yeah, that's it.
Mark, if people want to reach out to us,
lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Facebook. #GLcast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.